Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Chaim Schmidt from the Kosher Scene. You're listening to Kosher Scene Talk Show with Chaim Schmidt, and our guest this evening is Ted Merwin. He's the author of a brand new book on a fascinating subject. The book is Pastrami on Rye, an Overstuffed History of the Jewish Deli. Good evening, Ted.
Good evening. Hi, I'm Schmidt. How are you?
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Now, when I first heard the title of the book, I thought it would be interesting. I didn't realize how fascinating it would be. What I like about the book, first of all, is your style of writing. I have read some of your articles before in the Jewish Week, but here you outdid yourself.
Thank you.
But before we ask more questions about the book itself, who is Ted Merwin? You're an associate professor of religion and Jewish studies, but how did you get to that? Especially since, as you say in your book, you came from a family that was totally non-religious, didn't even go to synagogue on the three big ones, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, none of that.
Right.
What exactly possessed you to become a professor of Jewish studies? And then we'll talk about a few other things like the book.
Okay, well, you know, I mean, a lot of things happened to me kind of accidentally. I mean, I don't think it was something I ever intended to make my career or my profession. But I ended up studying at Amherst College in Massachusetts, which didn't have a very large Jewish population. It wasn't the reason why I went there. It was because of the Hillel or anything like that. But I ended up getting very involved in Hillel. And I decided that I needed to learn something about my religion. And I ended up actually spending a year abroad at Oxford University and going to the Orthodox Synagogue there, the Oxford Jewish Center. And that's where I really learned most of what I needed to know in terms of about all the different ways of davening and the rituals and everything like that. And so it was that experience that made me decide that I wanted to start keeping kosher and that I really wanted to make Judaism a very important part of my life. I had not had a bar mitzvah up until that point either. And so I decided that I wanted to do that as well. So then I ended up going to graduate school, and I studied theater. I got a PhD in theater, which was something that I'd always been interested in. And I wrote my dissertation about the not just the theater, but the film and the stand-up comedy and vaudeville routines that were popular in the 1920s. Which really reflected the Jewish family life in New York at that time. In many ways, I was trying to connect to my grandparents' generation. My grandparents were second-generation Jews. They were not immigrants, but they were the children of immigrants. And I was really trying to understand about their generational experience in terms of kind of having one foot in each of the different worlds. You know, they were still kind of tied to their sort of Lower East Side, you know, immigrant parents. And yet they were also, for the first time, they were able to become more part of the mainstream of American society. And so I was very interested in studying that dynamic. And so I wrote a whole book about that. And then I realized that a lot of those vaudeville routines and plays and films and songs and comic strips and so on that I had studied were set in Jewish delis. And I really wondered what was going on there. Why was the deli such an important location for the Jewish life of that time? And I realized that no one had studied that. No one had looked at how many delis there were or where they were located or what the heyday of the deli was. And I decided I wanted to start to research that.
Okay, but let me ask one question. What was your family's reaction when suddenly you were starting to become religious?
I think it was kind of confusing for them. I think it was a little bit off-putting in certain ways. They were basically supportive of it, but they didn't really understand it. They still don't really understand it. It doesn't really compute for them. But that was my decision, and I decided that I wanted to marry someone who was Jewish. I wanted to raise a Jewish family. I wanted to live in an Eruv, in a Jewish community. And then I ended up marrying someone who was a professor of religion, comparative religion, who had just gotten her PhD from Columbia University. And she ended up getting her first job was at Dickinson College, which was a college I'd never heard of. Neither of us had ever heard of, you know, coming from New York. And so that's where we ended up, and that's where we are now, in central Pennsylvania, about 200 miles from New York. And so I really decided that if I was going to have an academic career, I wasn't going to be able to get a job teaching theater because I didn't have any experience doing any acting or directing or anything that's practical that you need to have in order to teach undergraduates in a theater program.
Right.
So I ended up being a part-time religion professor, really Jewish studies professor, and part-time Hillel director, and I'm still doing both of those things 15 years later. I'm still a half-time professor and half-time Hillel director.
Years ago, I remember I was once asked by a relative of mine who was married to the rabbi of a Reform temple.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked to speak on the history of the Hasidus.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very well-attended lecture, and after the lecture, this couple comes up to me, and the woman is almost in tears. Papa, we need your help. Sure, what can I do? Our son, we sent him to the finest schools. We sacrificed everything to give him the best education, everything he ever needed. And now he went and became Orthodox. Can you help us? What went wrong with a nice Jewish boy? At first, of course, I thought that they were joking, you know.
Right.
But they were for real. Those tears were really streaming down her eyes.
Yeah, yeah. That's sort of my story in certain ways. But I think that one of the reasons why I was so attracted to writing about the deli as a subject is because I realized that the delicatessen was a place which was really comfortable and open and welcoming to all different kinds of Jews who came from different countries in Eastern Europe, who came from different social classes in New York, and who came from different streams of religious observance. I mean, one of the things that I find unfortunate nowadays is that we really don't have those kinds of gathering places in our society. And, you know, we have different kinds of delis even, where there are kosher delis, there are non-kosher delis, there are glatt kosher delis, you know, and there really isn't a lot of mixing of different kinds of Jews in the way that there used to be. And I think it's a sad state of affairs when you don't have a sense of Klal Yisrael, you know, even in New York.
Well, the deli for a long time was the great equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
Like you say in your book, you could have mm-hmm. the very, very religious Jew sitting side by side with a completely acculturated Jew into mainstream America.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow they had something in common. When they were eating that piece of pastrami or that corned beef sandwich,
mm-hmm.
there was something
right.
in common.
That's right.
And today,
that's
unfortunately,
exactly
the schism is much bigger because we don't have an equalizer.
No, that's something that I think a lot about. You know, I mean, what would it take to reproduce that in some sense? What kind of common ground would there need to be developed? And I don't know whether it could really be around food because of the fact that, you know, you have so many Jews nowadays, obviously, who don't keep kosher. And so it's very hard for unless they're willing to eat in kosher restaurants, which some of them are, but most of them, they don't really tend to do that because it's more expensive, you know, and that's not something
and
that's
also
a priority.
For a long time, kosher restaurants were not up to par, although there are many, many kosher establishments today that just happen to be superb restaurants which happen
mm-hmm.
to be kosher.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. and maybe those are places where there still is a certain amount of mixing between different kinds of Jews. But you know, the deli doesn't really serve that function anymore. I mean, one of the things that I really made a mistaken assumption about when I first started doing the research was that I had, you know, been led to believe by the historical, you know, this very, very scant amount of historical work that had been done in this area, that it was really the immigrant generation, you know, that was the most enamored of the delicatessen, and where the delicatessen played the most important role in the life of the community. But then when I started doing the research, I found that there were actually very few delis on the Lower East Side of New York in the period of the mass migration from Eastern Europe at the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century. You know, there was a food survey done of the 10th Ward of the Lower East Side that I cite in my book, and it's been cited many, many times. It was done in 1899, and it was really the Jewish, you know, the heart of the Jewish Lower East Side, Essex Street, Delancey Street, you know, Hester Street, and so on. Mm-hmm. And they found only 10, there was a survey of kosher businesses, they found only 10 delis, you know, in 1899, when there were so many tens of thousands of Jews who were flooding into New York. And so I realized that could not have been the heyday of the Jewish deli. And when I did a little more research, I realized that the immigrants often, you know, they couldn't really afford to have basically takeout food, you know. It wasn't so much a part of their culture.
I think also because of the late 19th century, most of the immigrants were not so much from Eastern Europe as from Germany, and German Jews were very, very different than their Eastern European brothers.
Well, that's true. So it does depend on what decade you're talking about. You know, by the 1880s, you know, you start to have a huge influx of Jews coming from Poland and Lithuania and the Ukraine and Hungary and, you know, those countries that were in the Pale of Settlement along the sort of Polish-Russian, you know, border. And, you know, those Jews were very poor and not very acculturated into American mm-hmm. society in the way that the German Jews had already mm-hmm. become much more part of the fabric of, you know, particularly a lot of them went into the banking, you know, industry and so on. And so to make a long story short, I ended up actually back in the same decade, or back in the same interwar period at any rate, that I had written my dissertation, my first book about. And so I was back in that time when my grandparents', you know, generation was really coming to the fore. And but I still didn't know how many delis there were, you know, and it took me a long time. I finally did some research at the Yeshiva University archives, and I finally found the sort of smoking gun, so to speak. I found a letter from the Commissioner of Public Markets in New York surveying the different kosher food businesses, and I was just astounded by the number of delis that were listed there. There were 1,550 kosher delis in the five boroughs of New York in the 1930s, during the height, obviously, of the Great Depression. I mean, at a time when you would think that Jews wouldn't be eating out, because they wouldn't have had the money at that time period either to be able to afford it. And yet, the delicatessen clearly was the, you know, central gathering place for the Jewish community. It was a place where Jews needed to, you know, gravitate in order to feel a sense of community, you know. A lot of Jews were no longer going to synagogues regularly. A lot of Jews weren't even keeping kosher by the 1930s. And yet the kosher deli still was a place where they really wove those bonds of community. And my mother had an uncle who had a deli in Williamsburg, a kosher deli in Williamsburg. And actually, one of the things that I think really led me to this subject was, you know, listening to her talking about what it was like with her cousins working on Sunday night in the deli, because Sunday night was the night when there was the most business. That was when extended families would tend to gather or take food home, you know, so people would get together with their cousins and aunts and uncles and grandparents and so on. And I think it really kind of fired my imagination, you know, it really sparked my, you know, my thinking about what was that atmosphere like? What was that sort of milieu, you know? I wish I could go back in time, you know, to be able to experience it, because my sense is that it was something that was very vibrant. I mean, certainly that's what people told me, that was such an important part of their childhood, were those Sunday nights in the kosher deli. And as I said, even for Jews who didn't keep kosher, something about a kosher hot dog or something about a kosher, you know, pastrami sandwich held a kind of almost mystical, you know, meaning, I think, a kind of, you know, very deep spiritual and nostalgic connection.
Well, I came to this country from South America, from Uruguay, in 1962. In 1965, I went to Yeshiva University. I remember the first time I took out a date, we went to Lou G. Siegel's. The girl was a New Yorker. She suggested Lou G. Siegel's. And we ordered this triple-decker sandwich. Once that came, I knew I was in a real Jewish place. There was something about the aroma of that sandwich. There was something about the look of that sandwich that only a Jew could have made.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
You tell a couple of interesting anecdotes in the book. For example, the fact that a certain Jewish politician did not go to a deli cost them the election. Want to tell us about it?
Well, that was actually fairly. That was actually not so. That was not so unusual, you know, that you would have. I think you're talking about. Is it Rockefeller? I don't remember.
Henry Morgenthau running against Rockefeller.
That's right. Who didn't campaign in the kosher delis in the way that his opponents did? That's right. But it's that's not a very unusual story, because the deli was a place where it wasn't just a gathering place for the Jewish community. It was a place where, you know, politicians, whether they were Jewish or not, would go to seek the Jewish vote, because they knew that's where they could find the Jews. And so there are quite a few stories about, you know, people either not campaigning enough in kosher delis or ordering the wrong combination, not knowing that milk and meat are separate or something like that. And so that's something that I found really interesting, that there were there were delis like in Boston. There was a deli that even JFK and all the, you know, politicians had to make a stop at in order to be elected, you know, because they knew that that was the place where they could find Jews. And that really, for me, spoke to the importance of the deli, not just in the Jewish community, but in the general community as well, as a place that was associated with Jewish life, with Jewish history, with Jewish culture, you know. And the irony of that was that these actually weren't the kinds of foods or the kinds of meats that Jews had really eaten in Eastern Europe. There was not a lot of pastrami and corned beef or whatever in the diet of the typical Eastern European Jew. You know, they could never afford it. So the whole idea that Jews were kind of coming to America and they were reconnecting to their homeland or to their childhood or to whatever, you know, maybe they felt that that's what they were doing, but that's not really what was happening, you know. And then the next generation, you know, after the immigrant generation, as I mentioned, I mean, I think there was also the sense that they were connecting both to their Eastern European past and also to their parents' experience on the Lower East Side. And as I mentioned, they weren't connecting to that either, you know, because it wasn't such a feature of Lower East Side, you know, life as well. So there's something about the deli that's really fascinating to me, in the sense that so much of it has to do with the kind of fantasies and ideas that Jews have about this kind of food, rather than the actuality of the food, of the place of the food in their history and their culture. And but that's okay. I mean, from a historian's point of view, from a scholar's point of view, you know, it's the meanings that you know, that things, in this case food, is invested with, is just as important as the facts, you know, as the actuality of the role that it served. If it became important for Jews, if it got freighted with all of these associations and with all this cultural meaning, then that's what's interesting to me, is why did that happen? How did that happen? And what does that mean for the sort of development of Jewish life in America, as Jews actually very quickly after the Second World War really moved away from, you know, a kind of, you know, connection to the deli? Because once Jews moved out of cities and started living in suburbs and became more health conscious and became more attracted to other kinds of food, particularly ethnic cuisines like Chinese food, there really wasn't such a place for the deli anymore in Jewish life. And that's actually, in many ways, just as interesting to me. Like, the story of the fall of the deli is just as interesting to me as the story of the rise of the deli. Because, again, it's about the meaning that, you know, the meaning that the deli has for Jews, or the meaning that other kinds of food developed, you know, for Jews as they became more Americanized. And that was true of Orthodox Jews and of non-Orthodox Jews. That there was, as you mentioned, I mean, nowadays there are all of these very high-end kosher restaurants. And now that's...
Yes,
really
you mentioned, among other, Levana's.
Yeah, that's something that really started in the 1980s, as I write about in the book,
right,
as there became this particularly more kind of modern Orthodox, a lot of modern Orthodox Jews becoming very successful in law and banking and business and so on and so forth, and really needing to have restaurants to be able to go out to for business, you know, and for pleasure, that really spoke to their class position.
And not only that, also a lot of ballet tshuvas that knew the non-kosher side of food, and all of a sudden they wanted that in a kosher format.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And I think that's one of the reasons why kosher Chinese became so popular. But not just kosher Chinese,
actually,
kosher Mexican, kosher Japanese,
kosher
sushi. Right.
It's so popular that I'm almost convinced that the Chinese must be the Ten Lost Tribes.
Well, that could be. I mean, you know, that started on, that did start on Lower East Side, you know, at Bernstein's on Essex Street.
Right.
The, first one night a week, and then eventually a full-time menu of both deli sandwiches and also Chinese food. And that's something that really spread, you know, throughout the city. But I think the whole concept of, you know, eating in a more Americanized way, or a more upscale, let's say, way, was something that unfortunately really kind of militated against the connection to the deli, because the types of foods that had been seen, you know, earlier in the 20th century as, you know, very exciting and very important and very meaningful and very satisfying, not just physically but sort of spiritually, you know, were demonized in a way. I mean, we're really seen as being very low class and very kind of, you know, immigrant, you know, however you want to say it. And so it was very hard for people to survive that sort of, you know,
We are almost out of time, but I'm not going to let you go unless you tell us a couple of funny anecdotes about the delis, or that have delis in them.
Well, I mean, you know, for me, I the funniest thing that was really that, you know, I did grow up eating this kind of food, particularly on Sunday nights, as I said, and I often tell the story of how I was the one who would always be sent to the deli to bring back dinner for, you know, when my grandparents were visiting. And it was always the same order. You know, it was a pound of turkey and a pound of roast beef and, you know, some a can of the vegetarian baked beans. beans and a dozen slices of the caraway seeded rye bread and a little container of gravy, you know. And that, you know, for me and for my family was really our connection to Judaism, given that we didn't have a religious affiliation or any kind of real connection to, you know, to religious worship or custom. And so I often, you know, I often tell this story, but, you know, it's funny how people say to me, you know, that's a very ironic story. And I always kind of wonder, like, what do they mean by ironic? And they say, well, those weren't actually the foods that Jews traditionally ate in delis. You know, you're talking about eating roast beef and turkey. You know, that's like, who ate roast beef and turkey when they went to a deli? You know, I mean, people had pastrami and corned beef and tongue, which was my grandmother's favorite food, was tongue. She loved to eat tongue, which
well,
is something that my...
Well, back in Uruguay, where I grew up, the deli, or the fiambreria, as we used to call it, that's what we had. First of all, it was only takeout. There was no such thing as sitting down in the fiambreria to eating.
Yes.
And, yeah, we did have pastrami. We did have roast beef. We had all that stuff. But, again, and, of course, the pickles. There was nothing like the deli pickles.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah. So I think, you know, what I realized, though, when I started to get that reaction to the story that I was telling was that, you know, I mean, in some ways my family was already, you know, even though we were, you know, this was really our, you know, very essential feeling of being Jewish and Yiddishkeit and whatever, that, that it wasn't so Jewish. What made us feel Jewish was not actually that Jewish, you know, in the scheme of things. And I found this to be a very important thing to keep in mind in studying both the kosher and the non-kosher deli as they developed in America, that, you know, what really makes something Jewish? You know, what does it mean for something to be authentically Jewish? How do you even define what authentically Jewish is? You know, and, you know, obviously there's a way of defining it in terms of the Torah and in terms of, you know, millennia of, you know, Jewish tradition and so on, and Talmudic understandings of, you know, Judaism and so on. You know, when it comes to food, it's very hard to, you know, kind of pin down even what makes food Jewish in the first place, because, you know, these are foods that were just essentially adapted from whatever cultures Jews lived in throughout the world,
well,
you know.
Once Jews were scattered throughout the world, we just did whatever was available. And in the case of those who ate kosher, we found a way to make it kosher or not to have that particular ingredient. And that, on the other hand, throughout the world, there have always been, even within the particular cuisine of whatever country, there have always been dishes that were created by Jews. For example, Rome, you have carciofi alla Giudia.
Mm-hmm. Artichokes, right.
It's called alla Giudia because it was the Jews who created it. And yet, any Roman cuisine in any great Italian restaurant will always have carciofi alla Giudia and other such dishes. So, yes, we created dishes all over the world. We created different things, even though it did not start as Jewish recipes. We made it Jewish once we adapted it to our particular needs.
Right, and that's exactly what I think I've, you know, been, you know, really interested in terms of writing about the deli, is this whole idea of, you know, how these foods too, which were seen as being somehow straight out of Eastern European Jewish tradition, were foods that, you know, developed under, you know, different historical circumstances that came to the United States. And, you know, corned beef was just as much an Irish, you know, dish, I guess you could say, or food as a Jewish one, you know, and pastrami. Sami, you know, started out as basically a Romanian and Turkish, you know, kind of way of preserving meat, and, you know, came to America. And, you know, nowadays, you know, in the absence of delis, you know, I mean, these foods are still available, but, you know, finding kosher pastrami or corned beef is not so easy. And I wonder sometimes whether, you know, my children, for example, are, you know, not really growing up with the same kind of connection to Jewish food that I had. It's not as much their upbringing, because we don't have. I mean, I'm living in a part of the country where we don't have kosher restaurants. We don't have any kosher restaurants. And so for us to go to a kosher restaurant, we have to drive to Baltimore, which is about 75 miles away. And so it's just not a big part of their lives. And I wonder, you know, whether Jewish identity in America can really survive in the same way if it doesn't have that connection to Jewish food and other forms of Jewish culture that were so important for so many generations, you know. You know, Jewish music.
Well,
and
there is
things.
A lot of stuff that my generation knew when we were kids that my own kids never knew. For example,
mm-hmm.
every Thursday night, kids used to go with our mothers to the shochet
mm-hmm.
to share the chicken. My kids never saw that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, go to the shochet to share the chicken? You buy the chicken already shechted, already
right,
clean
right.
and everything.
Right, of course.
Yeah, that
right.
Thursday night used to be the social highlight of the week. That's when you got to meet all your friends that you didn't see since the week before.
Right. No, of course. Right, and that's you know, that's something that I don't think we're ever going to see that again. We have to find other ways of, you know, raising the next generation, so that they
Absolutely.
Still have that deep connection, you know, to you know, to Jewish religion and culture. And I think part of what you know, people have said in reading my book is that they feel like you know, I was a little too you know, pessimistic, I guess you would say.
I agree with you. No, it's not that you are pessimistic. I think that the days of the Great Deli are just about gone. Yes, there are a few hanging on, but they may have been the best, but they're also on their way out, unfortunately.
Right, and maybe that's just the way life is, you know, that things just don't stay the same anymore from one generation to another. I think in the past, you know, you would have continuity over the course of a number of different generations. And nowadays, the world changes so quickly that you just no longer have that. And I don't necessarily see myself as pessimistic. I think I just see, I like to think of myself as being realistic about the fact that,
mm-hmm.
you know, you just can't really predict the future, and that Judaism is going to take new forms in the coming decades that nowadays we can't even envision, we can't even imagine.
Right.
But it will, and I think the religion is too vibrant and too vital to, you know, to disappear. I think it's going to continue. I just think that it will continue in, you know, in new ways, and they won't be based on you know, the same kinds of things, including the same kinds of foods that they were based on in the past.
Well, even the upscale kosher restaurants do not last as long as the delis used to last.
That's true.
People's taste change. And quite often, some of the restaurateurs are not the best businessmen. Once they have gotten a clientele, they can get rid of the chef, they get rid of that, they start cutting corners, and, well, that's the end of that. Whereas in the olden days, the deli owner was proud of his business and made sure that it was the best he could possibly make it.
Yeah, I think that's true, although delis did go in and out of business a lot, too. You know, I mean, You know, I think the restaurant business has always been a very difficult one to, you know, to be in, because people's tastes do change, as you said, and also it's very difficult work. I mean, I've never owned a restaurant, but you know, certainly from the research that I've done, I've come to get a really, you know, a real appreciation of, you know, what goes into what we take for granted when we just go in and sit down at a table and order from the menu and have our meal brought to us, you know, and we really don't have a sense of what's going on, you know, to create that meal. But you know, I think that the upside is that there's really a lot of very, very good food to be had. You know, I mean, there's so many different kinds of restaurants now that you know, that are very creative and really very, very you know, tasty you know, dishes that if you can afford it, which not everyone can, but if you can afford to eat out in some of these places, I think that you know, you can still have the kind of experience, at least of eating really satisfying food that maybe people had when they ate in a deli, you know, 100 years ago, or even, you know, 50 years ago, or something like that,
right,
where you
right.
do have a sense that you are, you know, connecting to you know, to an aspect of Jewish tradition that is very pleasurable.
And we're definitely out of time now. In fact, we'll run a little longer, but I enjoyed it. Time.
Thank you.
A ruthless taskmaster.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many questions I wanted to ask you, so many things I wanted to ask you. I think we're going to have to do this again.
Okay, I would love to. It's been my pleasure. I really appreciate you inviting me.
It's been a pleasure talking to you. Unfortunately, we couldn't cover everything I wanted. And good night, ladies and gentlemen. Good night, and thank you very much, Ted.
Thank you.
And
I hope people will read the book.
Yes. And please listen in to us again on Thursday evening at 11 o'clock, when we'll be talking with David Redden, Vice Chairman at Sotheby's New York, on an upcoming auction and exhibition of Judaica at Sotheby's. Thank you for listening in. Good night, one and all.